you know, Jimmy Murphy and yours truly have talked for a long time about what would happen if we ever got some kind of a radio show or a podcast where we could just talk hockey. I'd be a couple of Irish guys chatting about pucks. So guess what? We now have the Great American Hockey Show podcast where it'll be Joe Haggerty. It'll be Jimmy Murphy. We'll probably have Mike Giardi in here sometimes. We'll have Kevin Walsh. It'll be a cast of thousands with a lot of different hockey voices. I'm looking forward to it. And welcome Jimmy Murphy to the Great American Hockey Show universe.
Yeah, I'm glad to be on board here. And as you said, a lot of Irish going on here. But there's no Jameson or Guinness in the room right now.
Oh, no, there will be none of that.
Surprise, yeah, well, you never know.
Unless they become a sponsor, then maybe we'll work something out.
Yeah.
If Guinness or Jameson wants to ring Comcast Sportsnet New England and decide they want to be behind the Hockey Show podcast that features a couple of Irish guys talking hockey, why the hell not?
Joseph Haggerty and James Patrick Murphy, I think it's a match made in heaven. But Joe, this is a match made in heaven. I'm glad to be on board, and I can't believe we're, you know, very close to training camp right now, and it's starting to be that time of year where we start to really feel the hockey juices flowing again.
Let's get those hockey juices flowing, Murph. Let's start the show, buddy.
Let's do it.
Welcome back to the Great American Hockey Show. Joe Haggerty here with Jimmy Murphy. And Murph, a lot of changes for this Boston Bruins team over the summer. And, you know, probably rightfully so. Peter Chiarelli, during his time with the Bruins, I think constant was one of the big themes with him, and consistency, and having that same group of players, that same roster that served him so well, that won the Cup and got back to the Stanley Cup Finals in 2013. But, you know, you don't make the playoffs. Heads are going to roll, which they did. Chiarelli gone. Don Sweeney takes over as GM. And then we had a slew of changes over the summer. There are now only 8 players on that roster from the team that won the Cup in 2011, which, you know, year by year, it's just getting chewed away.
It feels like it's less.
Yeah, and it does. But that's still a pretty good amount. Huh. But, you know, thoughts on the changes that happened over the summer and, you know, some of the players that went, some of the players that came in, and if you think the vibe of the team has changed at all from what it was in the past.
Well, I'll put it this way, Joe. I mean, as you know, and, you know, some of my listeners might know, I spent the last 2 seasons up in Montreal. And from afar, I was getting updates, getting the sort of feel of the team from you. And, you know, it was something different every time we talked, or every time we reunited up at the Bell Center or down here at TD Garden.
Yeah.
In 2 seasons, I mean, it feels just – that feels so long ago from, you know, obviously just for myself from living here 2 years ago. But being back here, like, I it just feels like a completely different organization right now for the Boston Bruins. And there is a lot of change, and I'm very interested to see how it translates on the ice. But I'm also interested to see how it continues, because I think they're far from done with this change. I think we're going to continue to see more change. And I'll go right out and say it here and make a little bold prediction on our first show. I don't think Claude Julien will be coached by mid-November. I think he's going to be gone. I don't think this team is going to be that great off the get-go. They might surprise us, who knows, but I think that first losing streak, I think there's going to be a coaching change.
Yeah, I think once they hit the first extended losing stretch of the season, Claude Julien is going to be fired. I think they're going to bring up Butch Cassidy from Providence. I think there's...
Don't count out Mike Milbury.
That could definitely happen too. I don't think there's any question about that. I put it this way, I don't know why Mike would do that, because he's got a really great job at NBC, and it's, you know...
And here at Comcast.
And here at Comcast Sportsnet New England, that would mean we'd have to find... somebody to be with Felger.
I'm free.
on cross-check, if that did happen, which is a fantastic Comcast hockey show that starts in January. But, you know, maybe he does take over, and maybe that's the wake-up call that some of the players need that are on that roster.
I'm just scared of how long it's been since he coached.
I just think,
since he's been even part of management, and obviously that didn't go well. But.
Yeah, I think that that would be a real Hail Mary type choice, and I think it would be a short-term choice.
Yeah.
I don't think you hire Mike Milbury thinking he's going to be the coach for the next 5 years.
No.
I think that would be to really you know, make a statement as management that we're going to be a lot tougher on the players, and we're going to expect a lot more, and there's going to be a lot more accountability. I think – And it would be good for the TV side, too, for the product of, you know, the Bruins. There's no question about that. It would be great for us reporters to have Mike Milbury there. And, I you know, the guy knows a lot about hockey. There's no question about that. I just wonder how he would deal with this generation of players, which probably isn't used to being barked at the way that he probably would behind closed
doors.
Or
having someone be so blunt.
Yeah, exactly. And there's a player development piece that I think is very important to Don Sweeney and the Bruins now. And I think that, you know, Sweeney is tight with Butch Cassidy. I think he's shown an ability to develop these players. I would expect if it was an interim coach in the middle of the season that a guy like Cassidy would be brought up from Providence to coach that team. But I think you're looking at Mike Milbury and Butch Cassidy as the two favorites that if that did happen with Claude Julien. But we're talking about, you know, changes that might even happen during the regular season, which I agree with, that I think it is going to happen too. But, you know, let's get back to the changes over the summer.
I just want to say quickly before go away from that, though, if there is a coaching change, I think that might clearly show you, because we've had so many reports, and you and I can basically confirm, we know that Chiarelli and Neely were on a different page. They were button heads.
Well, there was a power struggle.
There was a complete power struggle, and that's what led to this.
Kim Neely's been the president of the team for a while now, and he wanted final say on everything, and he wanted everything to go across his desk as far as decisions for the team and run it by him first, and that wasn't happening. And, you know, at a certain point, Cam was
something's gonna budge.
Well, he was looking for that, you know, crack to sort of go in and make a change. And last year, not making the playoffs, it was there.
That was window. And I think what I'm saying with the coaching
and
change
and the salary cap decisions that Peter Chiarelli made. It's not like he didn't deserve to get fired. The Johnny Boychuk thing, I'm convinced, trading him right before last season started was the last nail in his coffin. Yeah. Once he did that, it was over.
And then not making the playoffs, just frosting on the cake. Yep. I'm with you there. And I think the next coach that we see will clearly show if there's a power struggle between Sweeney and Neely. Because you mentioned Bruce Cassidy there and how tight they are. And we know that, like you said, Sweeney's very into development. So, you know, Cassidy would be I called him Butch Cassidy, by the way, by accident.
Well, he goes by Butch.
Okay, yeah, yeah.
He goes by Sundance, he likes Butch.
Kid. He's all right.
So, the Bruins Twitter account calls him Butch sometimes.
Okay,
so if they
beautiful.
Do it, then I think it's perfectly fine.
But
to call him
I think, you know, if you see a coach like that come in that's clearly working with young players and clearly geared towards development, then we know that Sweeney's got a lot of pull. If you see a guy, like you said, Milbury come in, that's more of a bold move, a possible short-term fix.
A shock and awe choice to coach the Boston
Bruins. We know
Bruins.
They're not rebuilding. Neely say, no, I want to win now. So
it'll
be interesting if we get to that point, because I think it will reveal a lot, because I don't think we really know what direction this organization's going. Do we think it's a rebuild? Do we think it's a, you know, let's make the playoffs and win first right now? We'll see. I think there's going to be a lot in the first 2 months to tell us where this organization is headed.
Well, I think it's pretty clear that by the moves that they made over the summer, it's a mini rebuild at the very least, if not a full rebuild.
Rebuild on the fly?
By trading away Dougie Hamilton, by trading away Milan Lucic, by stockpiling draft picks and getting these prospects and replenishing that storage bin of prospects and players that are going to come up through your system that you're going to draft and develop. I think it's pretty clear that that's the way that they're going. What you said is true, though, and you wonder this going in because this is a totally new management team and a new dynamic between those two, even though they're friends and former teammates, is what kind of pressure, if they struggle, and let's say Claude Julien gets fired in the first month of the season and they continue to struggle, at what point do they start feeling pressure from ownership, from upper management, to start making these more immediate moves to try to get a quick fix to compete, to get fans in the seats, to get back into the playoffs, because you know there is an expectation that this team will be in the postseason and that they should compete at least enough to draw fan interest and keep people in the seats.
Is there from you, though? Do you think this is a playoff team right now?
No, I don't.
I don't think.
I've had a lot of fans ask me over the summer what I think is going to happen with the Bruins this year and how they're going to do. And I've always said the same thing. I don't think they're going to make the playoffs again this year because I think the defense is just too much of a question mark right now.
Mm-hmm.
You've got guys that are too old. You've got guys that you're expecting to be top four defensemen where I think you're asking too much out of them, guys like Torrey Krug and Adam McQuaid. And then you've got a bunch of young guys that you're expecting to be able to do the job at the NHL level. And you know, when you've got all three of those things and you don't have a couple of guys that you can hang your hat on in the prime of their careers and say, this guy can play 20, 25 minutes a night and he's a stud, you're going to struggle, and you're going to struggle to move the puck. You're going to struggle to stop guys in the defensive zone. You're going to struggle against fast teams if you've got older guys that are playing a lot of minutes. They're not going to make the playoffs because of all of that, but I do think they're going to be more entertaining to watch. I think they're not going to mail in games like they did last year.
Mm-hmm.
I think that, you know, they're going to be consistently more high effort, and I think they're going to show that they care on the ice, which you didn't see last year. I think a lot of guys checked out on that team last year after Boychuk was traded.
Yeah, and I'm with you.
Maybe they came back, some of them, but I think it was too late. It was too much of a gut punch move, and there were some guys I think that they lost and never really got back. You know, Milan Lucic, I think, kind of checked out after Boychuk got traded. And it was one of his good friends. I think he realized at that point that you know, they weren't going to compete that year. They weren't going to win the cup. And he started, you know, thinking about, you know, his situation, his contract and everything else, as much as putting it all on the line and doing everything he had to do in order for the Bruins to compete. You know, I heard a lot of complaints about players in their own individual situations last year with that team. But there were definitely cliques, and there were also players that were worried about their own stuff more than the team stuff last year for the first time more than ever. Guys worried about how their injuries were being treated and whether they were being rushed back. Guys that were worried about that they were stuck with AHL players as line mates and that these guys weren't good enough to play with them. You know, things like that you'd never heard from the Bruins before, you heard last year. And I think that's a reflection of, you know, the team that Peter Chiarelli put together, that move of trading Boychuk right before the year started, Sean Thornton being gone, who was a guy that used to stop a lot of that stuff from happening in the room. Mm-hmm. There was a lot of different things at play, but it was a much different team last year.
Joe, I'll go back even, you know, not just two seasons ago before I headed for Montreal, but even back to the season after they won the Stanley Cup in 2011. And I remember us having conversations. I feel like that sort of mentality was starting to trickle in even back then when they came back. And, you know, yes, they went the following year. They did make the finals again and took the Chicago Blackhawks to six games, and I give them all the credit in the world for that. But at the same time, there almost became too much of a, you know, we're the team. We're the ones to be. We're the big dogs here. And almost at times it seemed like after they won the President's Trophy coming into last year, they sort of thought all they had to do was show up on the ice, and that was it. Like, they didn't have to put in the extra work. They didn't have to go in the corners. You saw so many little battles being lost, and you could see that slowly building up to what you have at the end of this past season.
See, I agree. I just thought I saw it a little bit later. I still saw a lot of elements of that Bruins team, you know, the year after. I think they were just exhausted from the cup run that year after. The year they went back to the cup final against the Blackhawks in 2013, I thought you saw a lot of the same qualities. I saw it in that second-round series against Montreal when they won the President's Trophy. Yeah. I thought you saw a softness to that team mentally and physically that you hadn't seen before.
Yeah.
And it really got hammered home to me in that Game 7 at the Garden, where they had a chance to close out
and
the Habs and move out to the conference finals. I didn't think they came out flat. Yeah. I thought they came out panicked. I thought they looked scared, and they looked soft, and they looked like the moment got too big for them, and there were guys that were afraid on the ice.
And that just carried over into the last season.
Yeah, didn't bring their best.
Yeah.
And, you know, weren't able to clutch up and really become this big game player. For a team that had so many guys with Game 7 experience to come out and play that way, like
your rival,
there was an element of fear in that team that they were going to lose to them. But yeah, against the Habs was very surprising to me. And I didn't think it was going to carry over into the following season, but I thought you saw a lot of those same elements throughout the season where guys were too soft at times. Guys were certainly not ready to pay the physical price to win games. They weren't taking it to the opponent and making them afraid to play them. There wasn't that intimidation factor like there was before, and you started adding players like Riley Smith, Carl Soderberg, Dougie Hamilton, you know, players that are gone now that I, you know, felt were soft players.
Yeah.
And I think that is part of the changes and the determination that Don Sweeney and Cam Neely made is we need to sweep out some of these players that are soft, that don't play Bruin style, that aren't, you know, a modern-day big bad Bruin prototype, that don't put fear into the opponent. We need to get rid of them and bring in players that are going to be really aggressive, that are going to be physical, and that are going to have that swagger. And I think that's a lot of what they did in the offseason was trying to restore that swagger that was lost last year.
With the moves they made, let's look at a guy like Matt Bolesky, right?
Yep.
Is this the type of guy that can get closer to that mix that I'm talking about, sort of that blend of finesse, high-octane offense, but at the same time a defensively responsible player and a guy that's going to not be afraid to get hit and dig in the corners?
Yeah, I think Bolesky, I think, will play to a style that the Bruins fans will like, and I think that management expects. He's going to be physical. He's going to get on the forecheck hard. He's going to throw his body around. he's going to score some goals. He's got a good shot. You know, I think if he's put with better offensive players, his numbers will probably go up a little bit. He was suffering, I think, a little bit from being in the shadow of Getzlaf, Perry, Ryan Kessler.
Of course.
You know, all those players out there.
And still, he did pretty well, though.
He did. Look, combined last year, he had 30 goals between the playoffs
and the regular season. I thought he was going to go for much higher.
I did, too.
I think that was a steal.
It's a big win for Don Sweeney that he was able to get him for less than $4 million as a cap hit, because what that allows is maybe he steps into Milan Lucic's spot in that top line with David Krejci. And I think that's where they're going to start him off at, to try to play on that left wing and be that physical, you know, offensive presence there. But the fact that he's less than a $4 million cap hit, I think anywhere from the first to the third line, you can live with him wherever he ends up. So there's not the pressure for him to have to be something that maybe he's not. He's going to struggle, and where the team is going to struggle a little bit, is he's trying to replace a guy that was 6'3", 230 pounds, that struck fear into everybody in the league.
There's not many of those out there.
Absolute beast. No,
yeah,
there's not.
You're not going to replace that.
And you can't. And I think, you know, he's not the biggest guy in the world. He's, you know, 6', 210 pounds maybe.
Right.
I think if he tries to play with reckless abandon all the time, he's probably going to have some injuries. And, you know, it's going to be hard for him to play like that on a regular basis. And it's going to be different than it was with Lucic. And
yeah.
I think there's going to be natural comparisons there. And people are going to, you know, put one next to the other and say, you know, he's not bringing the same. Bolesky's not a guy that's going to drop the gloves and start beating the bejesus out of the other guy's toughest player. You know, in that regard, I think there's going to be an adjustment for him. But I think at the end of it, fans are going to embrace him, and the team will get a lot of good play out of him because he plays the style that Don Sweeney and Cam Neely want, and the fans want.
Is he right now to you, I mean, and obviously time will tell, but is he the biggest addition they made?
I think he and Jimmy Hayes are both huge additions, and they both bring something that was missing from last year's team. They're physical players. They're willing to pay the price in areas that you have to win games.
See, but there's a knock in Florida goals. That Hayes wasn't that.
See, but no, but he scored in front of the net. He's not going to kill people.
Yeah.
I don't think he's a fast enough.
I'm afraid that they're going to want him to be Lucic. That's the guy I think that they're going to put the Lucic comparables on.
Yeah, he's definitely not that guy.
There's maybe one or two other guys like that in the league.
Well,
and
Murph,
they're going to miss that.
Look,
but
they will miss Hayes, what Lucic brought, and Hayes is not that guy.
Exactly.
But
the key is to let these guys be what they are.
You agree? When you look at all the goals that Hayes scored last year, he was right in front of the net, right in front of the goalie.
Which the Bruins
rebounds,
were not.
Tips, redirections.
Yeah.
He's going to pay the price in that way. And, like, paying the price is not, like, dropping the gloves and destroying
exactly.
somebody. Or, you know, putting somebody through the glass like Lucic famously did in the highlight that's been played over and over again. It's paying the price in the corner to win battles. It's paying the price in front of the net to block the goalie, to redirect pucks, to get rebounds. And, yes, Hayes and Bolesky both aren't going to be what Lucic was, where he changed games because of his mm-hmm. forecheck and the threat of him hitting a defenseman in the corner. But I think what Hayes does way better than Lucic is his stick and his hands right in front of the net. Lucic was never good, despite his strength and, you know, his size and everything else and the intimidation factor, at getting in front of the net, at tipping pucks, at getting rebounds. He just wasn't quick enough to do all that stuff.
Right.
And I think the hands weren't there like they should have been to do that.
Mm-hmm.
Hayes will be much better in that regard. So, you know, they're different players, but I think Hayes is going to bring something that the Bruins didn't have last year and they badly needed. I think Bolesky is more sort of in the style of Lucic as far as forecheck, you know, good shot from the slot and the dots and things like that. But he's just not as big and strong and not quite as, you know, physically intimidating. But I think both of those players are going to have a huge impact. It depends on where they both play. But I think Jimmy Hayes for Riley Smith is a huge upgrade.
Yeah,
regardless,
I'm surprised many people disagree with us.
Well, look, people around. This is it's a funny thing. I read a lot of stories down in Florida right after they traded for Riley Smith, where they were talking about gaining speed in Riley Smith, and they needed more speed with the Florida Panthers, and you know they've got it in Smith. Riley Smith is not fast. Like, if anybody that watched him last year knows, he's average at best. It's certainly not a burner. Like, he's got good hands. He's got some decent skills, like in shootouts.
Right.
But he's not fast. He's not big. He will not go in the corners. He really won't go in the front of the net. He gets skittish in big games. He gets rid of the puck quick when he loses his confidence. And, you know, we saw in the second half of the last year where he dropped down into a pit where his confidence was gone, and it never came back. I said to people I thought they could get rid of him.
I thought it was a steal.
Because of the cost certainty in his contract, that they'd find somebody to take him. a lot of people disagreed with me and thought he was untradeable and nobody would want him.
I didn't think anyone would want him.
I just didn't think they were going to get value for him.
Yeah.
They got great value in Hayes.
I think it was a great trade for the Bruins.
And, I do like the element too, Murph, and I've joked about this, of having a legit Boston accent in the Bruins dressing room. It was missing for a long time when we both covered
the
team, and we needed a guy from Dot to come back and bring it
home.
There's no question about it.
For sure.
What about Dougie? And I know you had your run-ins with Dougie. I had my run-ins with Dougie. A lot of the different media members.
And I still didn't see that coming, though, Joe.
Not necessarily, how do you describe Dougie? He was, just a quiet, cerebral, and maybe a little self-conscious and certainly worried about what other people thought
thin-skinned.
And said about him.
I think he was thin-skinned, to be blunt.
Yeah, oversensitive, maybe.
Yeah.
And that turned into, I remember there was one time we had a scrum where he was giving me one-word answers to questions and trying to be difficult. I know, you had issues with him as far as that went, and other reporters did too. And on the ice, it's too soft at times.
Yeah, you know? But I want to say when we talk about that too with the listeners here, that's...
Who cares about our problems?
Right, but the problem was... His teammates had those issues, too,
from
what we heard.
Yeah.
And that, I think, definitely played a major role there. We heard the story come out after that he was a loner and,
I don't think he was a loner, but I think there were guys on the team that are more important and have been around longer that didn't like him. And just thought he was soft.
Guys that have a say.
Yeah, and he's a soft player.
Yep.
Like, at the end of the day, he's got skill. I think all he wants to do is move the puck and be on the power play and crank,
not worry about the defense.
Crank up the point totals. He doesn't want to pay the price in the defensive zone. He doesn't want to mix it up physically, even though he's 6'5" and 220 pounds. He doesn't want to do a lot of the things that Claude Julien's going to expect out of their defensemen. And, he was never going to be a number one defenseman because he didn't care enough about the defensive side of the puck.
Right. My problem is, though, Joe, with that deal
is... And I think he loses respect with teammates when he plays that way.
Right.
Because they think he should be given more than that.
But in terms of the deal, my problem was... Yeah, they got they got picks and that, but at the same time, they didn't replace the good stuff he did bring, and I don't see it coming from anywhere else on that defense right now. I don't see that prototypical puck mover right now. I don't see that offensive defenseman right now. I see a defense like you mentioned earlier in the show that really has no identity right now, and really, it's got a lot of problems that they're going to run into this year, both moving the puck and both taking care of the puck in their own end.
Well, when you trade Johnny Boychuk and Dougie Hamilton within a calendar year of each other and you don't replace either one
of
them
get picks
with legit NHL talent, you're asking for trouble. The Colin Miller guy they got in the Milan Lucic trade, the prospect from the Kings who won the hardest shot last year and the fastest skater contest at the AHL All-Star game, that's the kind of guy that they want. And it remains to be seen.
And I've heard great things from scouts on him.
Yeah, I have too. John Ferguson Jr. loved him
when he
watched him
Sharks.
A lot. And when in the AHL last year, watching him with the Monarchs, he watched a lot of those playoffs last year when Miller really ripped it up. And I think he personally vouched for this player. But, the guy may be talented, and I think he'll eventually hit because it sounds like he's got a lot of different skills. But, a lot of these guys, when they make the jump from the AHL to the NHL, it's a rude awakening. And it takes a while, and there's a learning curve, and that's going to be difficult. And, it'll be interesting. And, we talk about defensemen, though. And you got to mention our guest for today.
That's right.
We had on.
And as you're just talking right now
Brad
about the jump from the AHL to the NHL, we had a great interview with Brad Park. And one of the things he said that he learned when he made that jump was how cerebral it is. The biggest thing to him was the thinking game in the NHL. A lot of people talk about the speed now, and obviously that's bigger now. But I thought that was very interesting. And, obviously our listeners will get to hear that.
That's why playing defenseman, I contend, in the NHL is the most difficult position to learn and takes the longest learning curve from beginning to end when you get into the pro ranks and get to the NHL. I think it takes a lot of – people will argue goaltender. I think it takes a lot of seasoning to be a defenseman, particularly a top four defenseman in the NHL. But let's go now, Murph, to the interview where we talked about one of the best top four defensemen in the NHL of all time, Hall of Famer Brad Park. Here's that interview. New York Rangers, Bruins, Detroit Red Wings legend, Brad Park, Hall of Famer, on the show with us. Brad, how are you doing up in Maine? How's the weather today?
It's absolutely gorgeous up here, mid-70s, not a cloud in the sky.
It's the best time of year, isn't it, Brad, when the seasons are changing, getting a little cooler? I'm sure the lake is beautiful.
Well, the fall, September's a terrific month up here. It really is.
Excellent.
Brad, so we want to touch on current topics as well, but we want to give some of our guests that we have on sort of a chance to give the listener a background. So I guess we're going to look back to when you first got drafted into the NHL, what it was like then to come into the league, and maybe, you know, compare and contrast what you think it might be like now.
Well, my draft was back in the 60s, and at that time there was only six teams. And I had played with some teammates in junior who, you know, I thought were terrific players. They're a year or two older than me. And as they graduated as a junior, they did not make the league. And that was kind of an eye-opener that, you know, pretty difficult to crack a 16 lineup.
It's interesting talking to scouts these days when they're looking at players and sort of the way the game has changed and, you know, youth hockey and junior hockey and all that. And you see so many kids that are specialized hockey players now, that's the only sport that they play, and their parents are sort of, you know, having them just practice and focus and play games and focus on hockey all the time rather than other sports. Were you a kid that just played hockey in Toronto, or were you somebody that played a lot of different sports growing up?
Oh, no. I played baseball all summer. You know, once the hockey was over, you took the skates off until the fall, and you played other sports. And, you know, playing other sports, it develops different skills. It's probably going to help you with hockey. If you're playing baseball, you know, the eye-hand coordination and hitting the baseball is the same as eye-hand coordination deflecting a puck. So, mm-hmm. I mean, a lot of those concepts are the same. I mean, I was a pitcher, and I would have to think about, you know, what the guy at the plate was going to do. And when I was a batter, I had to think about what the pitcher was going to do. So developing those other skills in different sports can be very beneficial to hockey. And you don't get burnout because you're bouncing from sport to sport.
It's funny, you kind of beat me to it there. I was going to ask you, what skills or attributes you would bring from baseball, and I was thinking the cerebral aspect of that. How much, when you're talking about that as a pitcher, and you know, sort of researching batters and knowing what they might do, how much of that do you think came into play when you were on the ice and having that instinct of what, you know, a certain player is going to do when he's coming down the wing, or who might go to the front of the net?
Or how to beat a goalie.
Well, I think, you know, as a defenseman, you the guy who's got the puck, first of all, you have to see if it's going to be a one-on-one situation. Then you have to know the player's strength. You have to know whether he's a shooter, whether he's a passer, right? And if he's a passer, you look around to see what else he may have with him. If he's a shooter, right, and not necessarily a guy that's going to try to beat you one-on-one. So the idea is to give him a shot and give him the worst shot that he can get. And then, you know, if you can get your stick on it or take it away from him, that's fine.
At what point, I'm sure it might have been early on, just given, you know, where you were drafted and how you played before you were drafted. But at what point did you really, as a kid, think that the NHL was a real goal for you and realistic? I mean, was it pretty early on, or did you have to sort of be, like, convinced of it at some point that, hey, this might be a real thing I can do?
When I signed a contract with the New York Rangers, I gave myself 2 years to make the league, and if I, you know, if I didn't, I was going back to school. I was that realistic. As I said, guys that were before me and older, and I thought were terrific players, didn't make it. So when I went to training camp, after about the third day, my parents came down and they said, "What do you think?" And I said, "Well, they're not bigger, they're not faster, they're not stronger, they don't shoot harder, but boy, do they think better."
Yeah, I think it's still the same way today.
Yeah, that was my take in training camp. And as training camp went along, I got a lot more confidence.
You know, we talk to people all the time, you know, whether it be veterans now or rookies now, who talk about how training camp has changed a lot over the years, Brad. And recently we just saw the three first-rounders for the Bruins failed their physical. But that's very uncommon now, whereas I imagine back in the day – training camp was actually training camp when you played, right? You weren't already in tip-top shape. You went there to kind of get back into shape and get into game mode, right?
Well, I think the veterans did. The veterans, you know, training camp was a month, maybe a little over a month. And the veterans, basically, you know, they went in to get in shape in training camp. I was skating a good 3-4 weeks before I went to training camp just to have, some kind of wind that, I wouldn't tire out. Did we do gym work, work out in the gym? No. most of us had manual labor jobs, and by doing manual labor 8 hours a day, you know, that's pretty good workout.
Who is the who's the toughest coach you ever played for, Brad, in terms of how much he challenged you or how strict he was? Who would that be?
Well, there's three coaches that that I have a lot of respect for. Emil Francis was the most organized coach I ever played for. You know, we would have three breakouts, three forechecks, three neutral zone systems, and we could change them in the middle of the period. We did not, never had to go back into the dressing room to, you know, to change the breakout or change the forecheck. We did it right on the bench. Don Cherry was probably the biggest best motivator I ever saw. You know, he was fun to play for, and he was a great motivator. And a combination of the two was probably Harry Sinden, because he would talk you through the game. If you were sitting on the bench, he'd be talking to the guys on the ice, you know, pick them up, watch late. And when you're sitting, not that he was yelling to the guys on the ice, but the guys on the bench had a very clear example of what he wanted.
So when you were playing with the Bruins, Brad, did you have an idea you'd be on the same team with two of the biggest hockey analysts on TV, you know, 20, 30 years later with Don Cherry and Mike Milbury? Did you see foresee all this TV stardom for them in the future when you were involved with them at the Bruins?
Well, I think I did with Don Cherry. you know, he was such a creator, such a character. Mike Milbury got into it and tried to do the same thing as Don Cherry, be controversial. But Don was controversial without even thinking about it.
And what's your favorite Don Cherry story from your times playing with him? I'm sure you've got a million of them.
Oh, well, just one story was we were skating around in practice, and he came up to me and said, "I got to talk to you." I said, "What's up, Don?" He says, "I need you to start cross-checking guys in front of the net. I need you to slash them. I need you to punch them in the face. I need you to really, you know, really give it to them." And he said, "If you know, I've got all the other guys doing it. You're the only one that's not doing it. And if I can get you to do it, we're in better shape. Will you do it?" And I said, "No." He said, "Why not?" I said, "Well, if I slash a guy, punch a guy, cross-check a guy, what's the first thing he's going to do?" I said, "What do you mean?" "Well, the first thing he's going to do is move." I said, "Yeah." I said, "Yeah, then when he becomes dangerous, I got to find him again." He looked at me and he said, "You're too cerebral for me."
You know, one thing obviously Don prides himself on, and I think we all respect whether you agree or disagree with him, and you kind of touched on it a bit, is he's a straight shooter. Now, I know there's a book out on you that you did called Straight Shooter, so, and just – from the time I've known you and times I've had you on previous shows, you definitely are. Is that something you appreciated about him when you played for him, and something you grew to respect?
Yeah, you understood where from, you know, day in and day out. You knew exactly what he wanted. You know, at times you thought he was harsh, overly harsh on some of your teammates, and you know, and if it really got bad, you went and say, you know, as a player, I mean, I was a veteran in those days, so I'd go and say, "Hey, Don, you're a little too strong here. I think you better back off, all right? Because if you know, you continue to harass people, and that you start to lose the players." And that's one thing that Don never did. He never lost the players.
Do you ever imagine that when you were playing with the Rangers at the start of your NHL career that you would someday play for the Bruins, just given how bitter the rivalry was at points between those two teams?
Absolutely not. I mean, when I went to the Rangers, at the same time the Bruins and the Rangers went from being the two worst teams in the league to becoming the two best. And you had the rivalry between New York and Boston, you know, with the Red Sox, Yankees, the Knicks and the Celtics, and the Rangers and the Bruins. We absolutely disliked one another. I mean, we would go to the All-Star game, and, you know, there'd be five Rangers in there, five Bruins, five Montreal Canadiens be on the same team, and we wouldn't even talk to each other.
Wow, really?
That's how it should be.
Absolutely.
I can't stand seeing this. I mean, I'm sorry people say, "Oh, it's fair, it's, you know, it's being fair and it's being respectful." I can't stand seeing these players from opposite teams nowadays hanging out together off the ice or always being friendly on the ice. This is a game.
Well, there are times.
I want that passion back.
There
you know?
Are times now, right, when you go down to the dressing room after a game is over, and one of the guys from the other team is waiting outside the Bruins dressing room, not to, you know, because he's pissed about something that happened on the ice, but because it's his buddy and he wants to say hi to him before he jumps on the bus and goes back to the airport. There wasn't a lot of that when you were playing between rival teams?
No, as a matter of fact, one of my closest friends when I was on the Rangers, one of my closest friends today is Walter Tkachuk. And when I get traded to the Bruins, right, from the start of the season to the end of the season, we wouldn't even talk, right? And we actually, we played a game in Boston. I came around the net, and I faked left, went right, cut inside, and as I'm going by, Walter went off. And same shift. I come around, give the same move, boom. He knocked me on my ass. He looked down at me and said, not twice.
When you look back, that was towards the end of your career with the Bruins. When you look back at the beginning of when you came to Boston, I mean, ostensibly you came to Boston to replace Bobby Orr because the knee problems were, you know, threatening his career and eventually did a couple of years later. And I think your first year was his last year with the Bruins. Did you feel pressure? Was there an odd feeling coming in? Did you feel like that was the case, that you were sort of coming in trying to fill that void that was left by him when he was injured? Like, how did you approach going from the Rangers to the Bruins and sort of the things that were sort of put on your shoulders when you joined Boston?
Well, I think nobody ever fills Bobby Orr's skates, okay, number one.
Yep.
When I got traded to the Bruins, Bobby was just making a comeback. And so we played 10 games together. And we lost the first one, though he got on a real roll. The power play was doing great. The concept was basically, other than the power play, right, was the only time that we'd be together. Other than that, one of us would be on the ice all the time and looking for, puck control, because that's what we were, puck control defensemen. And we could jump into the offense, et cetera. Once Bobby went down after 10 games, we were flying to Chicago. As I'm walking on the plane, he's walking off. I said, uh-oh. And pressure, no. I mean, number one, I was 27 years old. I was an experienced veteran. And all I thought about was doing my job as best I could.
How long did it take before the fans sort of embraced you? I mean, you'd been an enemy, a big enemy, before you got to the Bruins. How long did it take for you to feel fully embraced in Boston as a member of the Bruins when you made that switch?
The first game in Boston, we played like Minnesota, and we got 3 or 4 power play goals, and we were winning like, 6-1 about halfway through the third period, and there was a lull, and I was on the ice, and a guy in the balcony, yells down, and the whole building could hear me, say, hi, welcome to Boston.
I bet that sounded beautiful to your ears, didn't it?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it was special. And then, as we went along and the team was doing really well and things like that, and just walking up and down the street. I could walk the streets in New York and nobody would recognize me, but I couldn't walk the streets in Boston.
Brad Pack is a perfect Boston accent kind of name. There's no question about it. When you mentioned puck control defenseman before, what do you make of, and do you pay a lot of attention to the talk about, advanced statistics and fancy stats and things like that are becoming such a bigger part of the NHL and sort of this generation of the NHL, where it's all focused on, zone time and puck control and shots on net and all these things? It really seems like this isn't exactly reinventing the wheel. This is all stuff that's always been important to the game. It's just that, they're throwing a few numbers around and slapping some fancy names on it, but it's the same old thing.
Well, I think that if you look at the finals last year with Tampa and Chicago, those two teams are puck control teams, right? They have good defensemen, D to D. They hold it. They move it up. It's not how fast they attack, but how well they attack. Most of the other teams, including the Bruins, are chip-and-go teams. I mean, they chip it up the boards and they go. They make a long pass, deflect it, and go. And when you're a chip-and-go team, and when you're, tip it in, you do not hit the blue line, their blue line, with any kind of speed or numbers. And that way you cannot generate, you can't really generate consistent offense.
Do you like the way the game is played now, the style of play and the way teams play and sort of how the game has changed from when you played? Do you watch games now and think, well, that wouldn't have happened in my era when I played? Or is it, you know, do you appreciate sort of some of the things and the changes that have been made? Like, what's your view when you're sitting there watching a game that's played nowadays?
What time does NCIS start?
No kidding, huh? How tough to watch?
It's very tough to watch. One of my problems is I start to critique it.
Yeah.
And when I start to critique it, I'm really not enjoying it. I loved the playoffs last year. I love Chicago, Tampa. There's certain players that I really like because they are puck control guys. So I kind of zoom in on those guys. I think the whole regimen of kids brought up in the last 20 years from when they're, peewee age all the way up through colleges and everything, junior, they're just taught to chip and go. And I think that the coaches, who most of the coaches are really not, Hall of Fame guys who had great skills, and it's very hard to teach it. They're very good at telling players what to do, but very poor at telling them how to do it.
Mm-hmm. Brad, I want to get your take, too, before we let you go on the what you've seen with the Boston Bruins. Obviously, a lot of change with this team over the last year. A lot of skepticism going on around Boston, where this team's headed right now. What's been your take on the Boston Bruins since, I guess, the end of last season?
Well, I think, they say they're not rebuilding, but they are rebuilding. I think, I just decided that before you guys called, I'd look at their rosters. Of the 28 forwards, 14 are centers.
Wow.
So they're trying to, their thing is that we got to generate some offense. So, center iceman is usually the playmaker. I mean, you look at Patrice Bergeron, who, last year had a good year, but he only had 55 points, and he was the leading scorer. To get a guy that can get 100 points is unique now in the game.
Yeah, a guy, 50-goal guy, you see maybe one or two, some years none. But 50 goals you don't see out of players anymore either, which, I think that's becoming a bigger problem, right, league-wide. And they have meetings with the NHL and the NHLPA and the junior leagues and college, and everybody, I think, convened, a few months ago to discuss that, try to find ways to generate more offense and create more scoring in the game because, it is tough to watch at times. And the name of the game should be goal scoring and the beauty of the skill players and bringing out what's best in them, right?
Well, yeah, and I think what they've done is they've really, years ago, they shot down offense because, for a number of reasons, they gave the goaltender too much protection. And what I mean by that is that, the average soldier in World War II was 5'7", 140 pounds. And that's what my father was, and I was bigger than him. My kids are taller than me. So as generations, the goalies are bigger.
Yep.
Then they have oversized equipment, right? The pads are bigger, the chest mm-hmm. protector bigger, the sweaters are bigger. Then what they did is they made the round crease and they gave them a 5-6 foot free ride on screenshots. Where in the old days with the square crease, if Wayne Cashman was standing in front of Bernie Perrant, the heels of Bernie Perrant's skates were on the goal line.
Yeah. That's a great point.
So if you're not going to make the equipment much smaller, and you're not going to cut down the sweaters so they can't have the big flaps underneath, and you're not going to change the crease circle, you might as well make the net bigger.
Mm. Yeah, be interesting to see if they go that way. Quickly back to this current Bruins team. I want to get your take too. I mean, it was a hot button issue here when it happened. Were you surprised to see Peter Chiarelli go? Did you feel like maybe he was a fall guy here, or did you think it was time for a change?
Well, you never really know. I mean, you don't know what's going on in the meetings. You don't know who's expressing what opinion. And, unless you get the absolute truth of who's expressing what opinion, it's hard to figure out, who you think is right and who you think is wrong. I think that anytime you're in hockey, whatever team you're going to be for, it's in general managers, coaches, players, you're going to get fired. Mm-hmm. Right? So the idea is, you know, was there a difference of opinion upstairs? I don't know. I wasn't in those meetings. If there is, then somebody's going to prevail and the other guy is not going to prevail. I remember a few years ago, when Cam Neely came on, right? Chiarelli said, I have the final say on any deal or any transaction, et cetera. And a little while later, Cam Neely says, you know, everything goes over my desk and I have to approve it. Mm. So right there you say, well, who's got the final say?
Yeah, and that creates conflict just naturally when that's going on. What at the end of the day, though, with Don Sweeney now the GM, Cam clearly in charge and having the final say on anything as president, is it an advantage, do you think, to have guys that played for the Bruins for a long time in those positions where they're making those kind of decisions because they understand the fan base, they understand the expectation and the history that goes along with it, and they, you know, there's a greater sense of what it means to put on that sweater, I guess, if you've played for that organization for a long time?
I think that the guys that played for the organization and played in Boston for a number of years know, you know, what the city expects, all right? When Chiarelli came in, he came from Ottawa, which really wasn't a great team, and it was a learning experience for him when he got here. You know, I met him a couple of times, and, you know, he was like, his eyes are wide open. And, you know, by coming from Ottawa, it's one thing to be an assistant GM, and it's another thing to be the GM. Right, because, you know, the assistant GM, the only way they find you is they look on the roster, right? But when you're the GM, right, you're the guy.
Yep.
You're the guy. So, you know, right now Don Sweeney's going to have to, you know, put his own mark on the team, right? And hopefully his mark and Cam's agree. If they don't agree, you know, they'll, you know, it's like saying, okay, we all have to assume that Cam's in charge.
Yeah, I think that's the case right now for sure. Before we let you go, Brad, you know, I've talked to you many times before about this, what was a very funny individual, was Ace Bailey, and obviously 14 years ago, recently, the 9/11 happened. You've told some great stories about Ace to me on the air, off the air. What's one that stands out to you the most about the man that you became friends with over the course of time in the NHL?
Ace was a wonderful guy. He was a scout for Edmonton and Los Angeles. And so a lot of times he'd be doing the American League. He'd be home all day. And his wife, Kathy, was working at a travel agency. Ace would clean the house, do the laundry, get the dinner ready, do the meal. He loved to cook and loved to eat, right? And he loved it, you know, he loved food so much that he was showed up at Worcester one night, walked into the press room, and you know, everybody said, Ace, I thought you were going to be in Springfield tonight. He says, yeah, I am, but the food's better here.
That's great.
I don't think I've ever told the story on the air, but my dad actually went with Ace Bailey up to Canada to pick up a bunch of hockey equipment for him. My dad owned a truck, a big, you know, white box van. And I don't know, Ace had got my dad's number, but he had a trucking company, and he said, hey, will you come up with me to Canada to pick up this hockey equipment? My dad was a huge Bruins fan growing up in that era, so, you know, no question about it, let's go. And I guess there was one of the stories that my dad told me was, this was the morning after my dad picked him up, when Phil gave his jersey over to Ray in that ceremony. And I think everybody had been out pretty late that night after it happened, you know, celebrating such a great event and such a great night. So Ace was a little sleepy and a little cobwebby and a little out of it when he picked him up early the next morning going up to Canada. And he said Ace didn't really wake up until like midway through the trip to Canada when they stopped at a gas station. And Ace went in and he came out and he had this giant like drumstick chicken thing that he was eating as he walked out from the gas station to the car that he'd found in the gas station. And that's really when he like woke up and lit up and was, you know, the regular old Ace for the rest of the trip was the gas station drumstick that he picked up. So he definitely loved his food, Brad. There's no doubt about it.
Oh, yeah, he'd have drumsticks for breakfast.
Oh, that's fantastic. Well, Brad, thank you very much for the time. We appreciate it, and hopefully we'll do this again in the future and talk about some trade some more hockey stories.
All right, guys. Thank you.
All right, thanks.
Thanks, Brad. Have a good one.
Well, that was a great conversation with Brad Park, Murph. I think my favorite part might have been when we asked him what he thinks of today's NHL, and he asked us what time NCIS is on. I think that lets you know what some of the previous generations think of the, you know, NHL these days, where it's faster and, you know, it's more energetic in some ways, but the goal scoring has definitely come to a lull from when Brad Park played. And you look at, you know, 100-point seasons from NHL defensemen.
Yeah, we don't see that ever anymore. I don't think we ever will again. But, you know, just great stuff as always from Brad Park. As I said to you after we finished that interview, we could have gone for about 3 hours with him. It's enlightening, and it's a pleasure to talk with a guy like that. But, you know, he's still obviously scouting a game himself today and watching it, and he's got his own take on it, and he makes some very good points. And it's great, you know, when you can see how a legend like that sees the way the game is going today. And he doesn't hold back. He tells me what he thinks and what he feels. So always a pleasure to talk with a guy like that.
Just don't expect him to watch any games and scout any games when NCIS is on, Murph. All right, the first episode of the podcast, Great American Hockey Show podcast, is in the books. For my co-host, Jimmy Murphy, I am Joe Haggerty. Thanks a lot for listening. And we'll see you in a couple of weeks where we're going to talk about all things great American and hockey.